rather than a population that has bred itself into a dangerous situation if food imports stop. But I don't like the idea of them being subject to the whims of a psychotic bit of software.
What about you, Captain? Doc asked.
Earth is still aligned with the Crydol Cooperative, and we've heard no noises from within the Confed that they wish to change their arrangement with them.
Yet, Jason corrected. It's coming. The machine is smart. You can't do too much too soon. He'll let his propaganda ministers go to work to both smooth over the fears after the Ashquarian invasion and to set up the public for the next conquest. Thankfully, that gives us time to try and undermine it.
I hope everyone realizes we'll need to cut ties with the civilian world for a while. We'll head back to Satora and settle our affairs, but if we're to be an operational asset of this resistance movement, having a permanent base and houses might be problematic. I think it would be better if we rolled our assets into some sort of legal protection that took our names off of it and leave home for the time being, if for no other reason than to protect the locals.
Agreed, Twingo said. Looks like it's back to living aboard the ship.
That statement was met with a chorus of groans and profanity. The insults had really begun to fly when Alokur approached them from the opposite side of the hangar.
You'd asked to see me, Captain.
Walk with me, Jason said, leaving his crew to their amusements. I just wanted to touch base with you before we pulled chocks and ask what you were really doing tracking my guys and raiding secret Keprian military labs.
It was as I said. At first, Alokur admitted. I would present evidence that someone within the Ministry had illegally restarted the Battle Synth program, and it would mean prestige and advancement. The more I dug, the more alarmed I became. Once I realized that there was something new working behind the scenes and that the Ministry may have been compromised, the mission switched to deny the enemy. I feel I was proven right. Could you imagine the machine with a whole army of next-generation battlesynths?
Jason shuddered before answering.
You don't think it might have been pushing Kepri to restart the program because it wants to put itself into a corporeal body, do you? He asked.
That had not occurred to us.
Alokur looked greatly troubled by the prospect. I will inquire whether that's even a remote possibility. If it is, the danger won't be over because we managed to shut down a single research facility.
Agreed, Jason said. I'll travel to Terra Novus as agreed and speak with the remaining members of Lot 700. As soon as I have an answer from them, I'll get in contact.
Thank you, Captain.
Alokur placed a hand on Jason's shoulder in the traditional Prue manner of saying goodbye.
For everything you've done.
That wouldn't work if you're actually serious about that last concern.
What wouldn't?
Jason asked aloud.
The machine's program is incompatible with the Keprian processing matrix technology they use in synths. Knowing it the way I do, I can also tell you that it's far more comfortable being able to flit between systems than being tied down to a single body that could be destroyed.
Good to know,
Jason said, and ambled back towards the Phoenix. Chapter 26.
How are you feeling?
My speech subroutines are normalizing, Lucky said. It is becoming easier to speak without having to think of each word individually.
So, you're really back? Jason asked. Not to sound, well, you know what I mean.
I am your friend, Lucky, the battle synth insisted. I have all of my memories, including the last thing I remembered of you being dragged away and up an exhaust vent. I still suffer from moments of confusion, but they are becoming less frequent. I fear the experience of dying and my subsequent rebirth will have changed me once I have fully reintegrated. But at my core, I am still Combat Unit 777.
It seems like your new body has some new tricks the other one didn't, Jason said. The smaller, sleeker design seems to fit you better.
I will admit that I am enjoying not looming over people or inducing fear by my mere presence, Lucky said. I can sense many other abilities hidden within it, but so far am unable to consciously control them. My flight modes were found out of necessity. Maybe it will be the same with the others. I'm sorry for taking so long to come around. When we lost you the first time, Crusher and I didn't take it too well, I have heard. And the thought of getting my hopes up just to have you taken away again was more than I felt I could handle. There is no need to apologize. When I first regained consciousness, the sheer chaos of strange inputs, a different body, and no sense of how much time had passed very nearly drove me insane. Once I began to regain control of these things, I could recognize your voice and focus on it when you were near. The sound of it coaxed out memories of my old life, and once that happened, it opened a floodgate that allowed my higher functions to reassert themselves. It took some time to sort it out, but I feel the worst is behind me.
I'm just happy to be able to sit here and talk to you again, buddy. Jason's voice was thick with emotion. We'll work on it together.
Since Lucky had helped them on Thalia, it had been a steady progression, with each day getting a little better than the one before it. Alokur's people and Kaz had both warned him that the battle synth wouldn't be exactly like his old friend had been, if for no other reason than the emotional trauma he'd been through. But Jason didn't care. The Lucky that had saved his life on Capri by sacrificing his own hadn't been the same person that had emerged from the stasis pod all those years ago when they first met. All that mattered was that the family was whole again, and that they would all be there to help their friend when he needed them to. Jason left Lucky in the galley, aware that he'd been a little selfish with the time he'd been spending with him, and walked back up to the bridge to relieve Cage. The little voice in his head had fallen silent again, but only after imparting some unpleasant news to him. The unpacking and repacking of the legacy from his neural implant had caused some issues with both the implant and the archive. Kaz told him he would need to get the thing out of his head or the side effects could become serious. Now he had quite the dilemma. Right now, the legacy was safely hidden in his head. If he transferred it to an external medium, it would no longer be possible for it to be 100% secure. With the revelation that the machine was in confed space and in a position of power, did Jason dare remove the archive for fear the machine might get it? The plans for the actual machine, the star-chewing superweapon, were in there. How could he risk exposing that to daylight? The alternative? The legacy would keep leaking, for lack of a better term, and wreak havoc with his neural implant to the point that it could become debilitating. Simply switching off the implant wasn't a practical option, and removing it altogether to replace it just brought up the same issue as before. Should he risk having the legacy out where it could be captured, or destroy it altogether?
You look like someone who has a lot on their mind, Cage said, as he grabbed his stuff to leave the bridge.
Just processing everything that happened, Jason said. Glad to have Lucky back, but still not sure how to put what happened on Thalia Prime into context.
You'll figure it out, Cage said over his shoulder. You always do.
You have some time. The serious symptoms won't start for over a year by my estimate, and there's a chance the legacy stabilizes and what we fear never comes to pass.
Would you take that risk?
I would give this matter the thought and consideration it deserves. And I'm not just saying that because it's my ass on the line, too.
He spent the rest of his watch restless. His fears of what to do with the unimaginable power he had stored in his head, the emotions that were coming out at the prospect of going back to war and doing so as a member of a small insurgency that was trying to topple a superpower. He had been an NCO in the Air Force, for Christ's sake. He wasn't equipped to make these sorts of decisions. If he chose or executed poorly,
The ramifications were now on a scale he couldn't even wrap his head around. By the time Doc strolled up with a steaming mug of coffee to replace him, he still hadn't found any answers, but he felt like he had found some level of peace with his new lot in life. He would do the best he could and focus on each mission as it came. And, hopefully, when the war was over, or he was dead, he wouldn't be remembered as a total fuck-up. In his line of work, that was about the best anybody could ask for.
This has been an Audible Studios production of Legends Never Die, written by Joshua Dalzell. Performed by Paul Heitsch. Executive producers Rena Ayer and Mike Charzik. Producer Neil Basic. Copyright 2018 by Joshua Dalzell. Sound recording copyright 2018 by Audible Inc. Audible Studios is a division of Audible Inc.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.